Is someone downloading Game of Thrones? Not that we condone that sort of thing.
This is Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTMPodcast or at Q Broadcasting. You can find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q.am. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of Back to the Mac. It's a show all about Macs. We don't do iOS. Because of the fact that we don't do iOS, again, we have absolutely nothing to talk about. But having said that, we are on the brink of some news. WWDC is just around the corner on the 10th, isn't it, guys?
It is indeed.
Yeah, so there will be lots to talk about once it has actually taken place. And there are a little bit of rumours building around it. What interesting rumours have you guys been hearing about WWDC?
So I think one of the more interesting rumours, trying to keep it Mac-based, but I know we'll dip into iOS 7 at some point, the new Intel processors that were announced recently.
Was that today or yesterday they brought the Haswell out?
Yesterday, I think.
I think I read it yesterday.
I think we discussed this last week about the new Haswell processors, the fact that they offer even more battery life. It's gotten to the point now where Intel have stated on their various marketing literature that it's, I think, what was it, over double the amount of battery life. It's the biggest leap in between chip generations they've ever done. So that tends to mean more power, you'll get the same amount of battery life, but you get a lot more bang for your buck. So I'd love to see at least some sort of MacBook Air, MacBook Pro Retina refresh. It's got to be on the card, surely. I mean, the MacBook Air hasn't been refreshed in a year now, apart from a little price dip change.
I think we'll see a new MacBook Air. The other thing that it seems rather fortunate, is a way of putting it, that the Haswell was announced this week, just so close to WWDC, doesn't it? It seems a bit of a coincidence.
Yeah, it's just a little too coincidental. The fact that, I don't know, the fact that they've just dropped this announcement so soon before WWDC. I mean, if Intel had this ready a couple of weeks ago, maybe they would have dropped it then. Is it coincidental? Is it a precursor to say, here's our new chips, and then Apple a week later to say, and we've got them already? I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something. I think I remember reading that Apple was one of Intel's biggest customers, to the point that they're actually so influential they could probably ask Intel to push back a release by a week or so, and they'd probably do it.
Wow. They've got quite a close relationship with Intel, haven't they? Because there was a point years and years ago, wasn't there, when they were closely with Intel to create some chip, wasn't it, that was unique for the Mac at that time?
Yeah, that rings a bell. Was it the Core Duo to begin with?
Or maybe. I certainly can remember Steve Jobs.
I think it was the Core 2 Duo.
Yeah.
Core 2 Duo.
Having Steve Jobs.
I think they started with that, like right off the PC.
You know what it was? It was the original MacBook Air processor.
Right, yeah.
It was that bespoke one.
Yeah. They had the Intel guy on stage, didn't they, talking about the challenges of making one to get into something so small and so thin and that wasn't getting hot and all the rest of it. So
yeah, it was a special one-off chip, which would explain that it was not very powerful.
And astronomically expensive as well.
Oh, yeah, the MacBook Air was expensive.
Wasn't it something like $2,500 when it first came out?
With the SSD option, which was $1,000 on its own, the 60 gig SSD. Yeah, it was ridiculous, the pricing. But it was the first consumer available machine that was shipping with an SSD, or yeah, at least the option to have one.
Yeah, true. And as thin as that as well. Yeah. So, and Jacob, you've just dropped a bomb there, I see.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us about this OS X 10.8.4?
So, OS X 10.8.4 was just announced. I saw it on Twitter a few minutes ago. It includes Safari 6.0.5, improved voiceover compatibility with text documents and PDF documents.
So, but there's nothing exciting, is there really? I suppose improved voiceover compatibility with text to PDF, a new version of Safari, which is probably just security updates and whatnot, improvements for enterprise Wi-Fi. Fixed an issue with FaceTime to non-US phone numbers, and that's about it, really. So it's an incremental thing. Now, this is weird, actually. This is weird. Oh, mind you, haven't said that. No, maybe it's okay. I was just thinking, you know, obviously, if they're going to be announcing a new version of OS X next week, but then again, it's going to be another couple of months before we actually see it, isn't it? So I suppose that's all right. Yeah. This has been coming forever, this update, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a while since we had 10.8.3, but just like the Intel processor, the timing of this update is quite, you know, maybe a bit coincidental. We may be seeing some software release next week that will require
that needs this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that especially
new Macs, because they would have developed a 10.8.4 for whatever the new processors are. So I suspect we've got this one, but the new Macs will have their own little version of 10.8.4, so they'll ship with that as standard once they've launched.
Could be. Yeah, I suppose they could have a lot of extra features hidden in there that they're not going to announce on the update.
Hey, I just saw something awesome. A fix for an issue that may cause iMessages to display out of order in messages.
Yes!
Is this in 10.8.4?
Finally! I hate that app.
On a dedicated web page, Apple mentions that a popular issue with iMessage has been fixed in today's update.
Yeah, see, it's so in the about update. Oh, fantastic.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you, Apple, because you're too late. We've already got on Hangouts.
We've been Google. It's too late. Can't bring us back.
We're sleeping with Google now. You're too late. Yeah, we're probably the only four people in the world that are, but, you know.
That probably explains why the call quality when we tried Hangouts before was so good.
We were literally the only people in the globe that were on it. So there you go. So there is a little bit of Apple news this week. And I suppose the other thing that caught my eye as well, which is not Mac related, was the, does anybody notice the new cheapy iPod Touch that's come out?
Oh, yeah, the new 16-gig one.
I say, like, oh, cool. That is perfect for parents. If you just want an iOS device for your children, awesome. Nice and cheap. Doesn't have a camera, so they don't have to, so they're not taking millions of pointless photographs.
Oh, someone suggested one of the various tech publications that it was a great alternative to a dedicated handheld, you know, gaming device like a 3DS or a PS Vita.
Absolutely.
One of those with an Apple TV. That's a decent Wii U alternative.
Yep, and it's not going to cost you that much either. So,
I mean, do you have an Apple TV, Rich or Jacob?
I've got two.
Have you ever played any of the games that are designed for the Apple TV, like Real Racing 2? And
do you know what? I tried it. I tried it ages ago, but having said that, that was when my Apple TV was connected through Wi-Fi, and that was a woeful experience. It kept sort of just throwing me. Actually, did it? I think it ended up sort of kind of completely throwing the router off altogether, and me having to reset everything. So, but I've got all my stuff wired through home plugs now, so I think it would probably be more stable if I did it now. Yeah. But no, I don't. I tend to just play on my device or a bit of Xbox. So.
See, I think that's something Apple really should improve, which is advertising the games that are built for the Apple TV in that way. I've got loads of iOS games, but I don't know which ones I can just mirror and which ones are like Real Racing 2, which look actually really good and are designed to be viewed on the TV.
I saw a funny tweet. Federico Vitici from Mac Story says, only Apple can get nerds excited for a bug fix in a messaging app.
Yeah.
It's so true.
But it was such a pain.
It was like that for a whole year. I'm sorry, but that's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. They should have pushed, if they had that, they should have pushed that out on its own a lot, lot sooner.
The worst thing about the bug was it wasn't just something that happened to a lot of people. It happened to everyone who used iMessage on the Mac.
Yep.
And every single person has this problem where the messages come in and out of order. And mine often says I've got a message unread, yet I don't, so I have to end up killing the dock just to get that working again.
So it
was a bug that affected everybody. And I'm not surprised a lot of people are excited by it. Only Apple can generate that much excitement, as that tweet said.
I wonder if it'll stop the ridiculous kind of update assault. You know, like Johnny was saying before, where it goes... There's no need for that. Just keep it silent until it's ready to use.
I've not liked the new messages app at all. Compared to iChat, how it used to be and how it still is when you're using it for instant messaging. iMessage in general, it was a text message alternative they've tried to shoehorn as a replacement to instant messenger, and it hasn't worked. And it's dreadful. And it's god awful.
It works pretty well just across iOS if you only use it that way. Although I haven't said that. I've had people say that they haven't got messages before and stuff. So,
I found a weird bug with iMessage if you use it as a replacement for SMS. Obviously, most people use it for SMS. I mean, when was the last time you sent a text message through your iPhone?
Yeah.
But one thing I found was I have an iPad and iPhone. My girlfriend has an iPad and iPhone. I was trying to send her a message, I think one time or another, and it kept saying delivered. So my phone wouldn't send it as a text message. But the worst thing was it wasn't delivered. She just wasn't in any data reception. She was inside a building or something. And the worst part was her iPad had picked up the message, said it was delivered. So the phone, as far as it was concerned, was, I've delivered this message to her, it's fine. But she never got any of the messages that I sent to her.
Oh, goodness me.
So as a fallback, it's just bad. It's just dreadful from the get-go.
So, yeah, I suppose that could sort of bring me along on to, given that that's one of the things that actually I was going to have on my wish list to fix for the next version of iOS. Not iOS, sorry, OS X. Is there anything that you're hoping to see for OS X, the next version, in WWDC?
You know, I've been trying to give this some thought, and I honestly can't think of anything specific.
I know, I was kind of the same. I was thinking, do you know what? It's kind of such a rounded operating system as it is. And do you really want more things added to it necessarily?
I'd rather this next one be a refinement, kind of like how obviously Snow Leopard was to Leopard and Mountain Lion was meant to be to Lion. Mm. There's certain things that over the last couple of updates, it's done really well, but there's nothing I want added to it. There's just things I want fixed with it.
What about aesthetically?
Aesthetically, I like the look of OS X overall. It took a long time for Apple to move away from brushed metal and unify the entire operating system. And I'm quite happy with how it looks. I just can't think of anything I want it to do that it doesn't do already.
The whole thing about if they're going to go flat with iOS, for instance. I'm wondering if the Messages app is just a placeholder. So it was just something that kind of sat there for a year because they wanted to make it work, but they didn't put that much effort into it because they had something better planned for this year, for an overhaul or something. I don't know. Maybe all their apps will have more of a completely unified experience and stuff. Because Reminders and Calendar are skeuomorphic in a way.
Yep.
And then Contacts is skeuomorphic.
Yep.
And then you go to something like Messages and it looks like every other Mac app. And then You go to Mail, and it looks like Mail has forever, and Notes is skeuomorphic, and Game Center is skeuomorphic, and Photo Booth is skeuomorphic. It's like, it's kind of inconsistent. So,
it is on the Mac and on iOS. There's kind of a mishmash of stuff, and
it was like podcasts that on iOS that app was like. One section was this, the other one, the store was completely different and it never loaded properly. And it was all over the place.
So if they kind of, you know, made it more, like you say, sort of visually unified, and maybe it's made some of the icons kind of make a bit more sense. I mean, like the Finder icon, how is that a Finder? I don't... If that was
it's,
like...
It's iconic, though. Like, that's the Mac Finder.
Yeah, I know, but actually, when you think about it, it doesn't tell you, the icon doesn't convey that that's what it is at all. It's not like a magnifying glass or, you know...
Does Safari tell you you're going to browse the web?
No, it doesn't. Like, that's completely meaningless as well.
It's a compass.
Yeah, I don't understand what that's got to do.
I would think, oh, that's like a mapping app or something.
Yeah, but, yeah.
The thing about Safari is you've got browsers like Chrome and Firefox, which... Again, Firefox doesn't necessarily convey what it's going to do either, but everyone
knows that.
Neither
does Chrome.
Exactly. But the thing with the Finder is I kind of agree with Richard in a way. A lot of people I speak to who are new to the Mac have no idea what the Finder is. And when I ask them, okay, you need to open a Finder window, they'll go, what's the Finder? And I always have to say, you know what, click on the first icon in the dock. And that's as far as they tend to know what it means.
Because you can't remove it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an icon you can remove. We all know what it's there for, and we all know how long it's been around, but for new people, they just see this as an app that's constantly running, which it is, but it's not intuitive in the way that that's designed to be your front end for all your files.
Suspect, like Windows Explorer, I think, has it's like a folder icon or something. That makes sense, obviously.
Yeah. But I'd see the Finder icon going at the same time that Apple were to ever do away with the traditional file system on the Mac and move to something like iOS. I don't see them doing that anytime soon, and preferably I'd rather they didn't, but if they ever did that, I think OS X would have a major overhaul and the Finder would be probably the first casualty of that, and it would go. And going back to the point about keeping OS X, you know, the user experience and the user interface more seamless, the pro apps have been separate for a long time now. When Aperture came out, when Final Cut Pro was available, people would often say, oh, this is what the future of OS X is going to look like, this dark metal appearance, you know, there's no colours, it's all very serious looking, but it's just been, you know, it's just been passed to the pro apps and left there. It's not spread to the rest of OS X, so just like with iOS where you've got this skeuomorphic shift where some apps look like iOS have always looked, other apps like Passbook and Calendar look god awful. You've got it in OS X as well. You've got the traditional interface we all know, and then you've got certain apps like iPhoto, iMovie, Aperture, which all look totally separate. And is that separation helping people know what apps they're in? Is it designed to make you feel more at home, like if you came from iOS where all the apps tend to feel a bit different? It's just a very strange experience when you're using these different apps to see that. I mean, at least on Windows, most of the apps look the same. Windows isn't the most glamorous operating system, but they all do have a more unified experience than OS X, I'd argue.
I think the other thing that could be improved on the Mac and on iOS as well as the way that you kind of, the way that the programs communicate with each other. There's often with I find you have to keep finding a workaround for how you can get something into something else. Does that make sense?
I can see what you mean.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, God, if it just gives us some more options for how we could share things between applications or something like that, or move things around.
I mean, what iOS does, for instance, when you're in Mail and you want to open an attachment, you tap and hold it and it'll say open with or open in, and you can open it in Dropbox and it'll upload it to your Dropbox. Or like, I think they just added this to Byword too. You can open your document in In the export options, you can actually export your Markdown file to, say, Dropbox or something, like if you're using Scriptogram. So that's useful.
Yeah. And the other thing that, which I haven't seen anybody say an awful lot about online, is their Office suite. God, when are they going to update that?
Oh, please don't.
You know, I mean, all right, fair enough. There's nothing massively wrong with any of it, but God, it could do with a bit of a kick up the pants and a cosmetic update at least.
Yeah, there was some talk about iWork where it's had its last major update in, was it 2009, 2010?
Yeah, 2009, yeah.
It's been years, and Numbers is still a great spreadsheet app. It's the one I'll open. I don't have Office because I have iWork. It's what I need it for.
It works well on Macs.
That's, it does.
It doesn't really have a lot of issues either, so they don't technically have a lot to fix.
No. I'm not saying that they do need to fix it necessarily, but just in terms of keeping stuff fresh. Because if you're going to make all the rest look snazzy and minimalist and flat and all the rest of it, you're just going to leave them sitting there with the old look about them? Again, you're back to inconsistent UI, aren't you? So
the problem with the iWork apps especially is now they're iCloud compatible, so you can save your documents in the cloud, and they're designed to sync with iWork on iOS. Both the OS X and iOS versions need to make sure they are updated around the same time to support the same features. So if you had, say, macro support in Numbers, you'd need to make sure that support is in the iOS version as well. Otherwise, all your documents you are saving will not open in iOS. Yeah. So there's that balance as well. And Apple are known for having Teams work separately, and you know there's very little interaction between Teams as they're developing software. And if that's the same with iWork, then that's kind of a large obstacle that Apple need to work around. And they need to make sure that at least if they're going to do an update to iWork, are they going to update iWork? Are they going to kill it off? Are they just going to leave it in its current state for as long as they can leave it for, really?
Yeah, it makes you wonder how they're going to go ahead with that. There was some speculation that I was reading, perhaps it was in, might be in a Mac user, that they were sort of saying, could they possibly go across to subscription-based services like Adobe for sort of the iWork suite? I don't know. I don't know if they would.
I think the only subscription Apple do is paying extra for iCloud and iTunes Match.
But what this article was saying, which I wasn't aware of, was that apparently Wall Street are more in favour of software subscription than they are hardware, because they don't see hardware as a reliable source of income.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you've got a software subscription that runs on and on, that's guaranteed income. Whereas, you know, which is fair enough in a way, I suppose. I mean, let's say Apple bring out the iPhone 6 and they get something totally wrong with the idea of it, and it's a duff egg and nobody's interested, then, you know, their stock would plummet. There's no question about it. But if they were backed up by a lot of services that people pay for all the time, that would cushion the blow a bit, wouldn't it? So,
that brings up a new talk, though. Like with today's release of Byword 2, they added some improvements, obviously bug fixed, and finally they sandboxed it because they had to. But the interesting thing was what they did with their really big new feature, which was publishing to like a WordPress or Tumblr blog. And there's support for other ones as well. But the interesting thing was they charge $5 for it, and it's an in-app purchase. The app itself is $10 already, unless you bought it on sale. And I think it's worth it personally. It goes on sale all the time. You can still grab it if you wait. But I bought it a long time ago. I think it was for $2 or $3. It was just a really good day. And I've had it ever since. And I mean, they don't charge to upgrade the apps because that's not how Apple's ecosystem works. So instead, it's smart to use the in-app purchase thing, which they did it well. I mean, it's $4.99 on in the US on the Mac, and then it's also that price on iOS, and it's a separate purchase. So
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way of handling it.
Yeah, it's quite clever because for people who just want to use it to write, they can do. For anyone who wants to use it as a tool to blog with, then you have the option to pay a little bit more and do that. And it's still, I think everyone would agree with writing in a native app, even now, it's still a lot better than entering text into a website.
Hmm. Is anything, and well, the thing I was going to say is the one thing I think Apple could do with massively improving on is any of their cloud-based services. They're all poor. I think they're the weak link. And the way that everything's heading now, I think that's a real disadvantage to Apple. You know, Google have got their acts together when it comes to sort of web-orientated services, and you know, the fact that you can create a document, albeit a basic-ish one, on the go in sort of Google Docs and things like that, and you know, then a quick flick to another tab and you're back into your email. And I just think there's a lot more they could do that way. And iCloud.com, when you're using it elsewhere, because I do use it, and I use it on Windows computers when I'm working, it's very limited what you can do with it. You could basically upload stuff, download stuff, and that's pretty much it. It includes email as well, but I don't see why they couldn't bring iMessage to iCloud.com. And the other thing that would be great if it could include is you can't, and I don't understand why you can't do this, you can't, so let's say, for example, with myself, I create invoices and things like that, and then when I'm done everything, I upload the invoices onto iCloud. But when I do that, it just literally whacks them up on the page, and I can't do anything else with them. I can't move them about. I can't reorder them. I can't put them into a folder. And the only way I can do any of those things is to pick up an iOS device and do it with that. And I don't see why that needs to be the case.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing everyone would like to see is some substantial changes and, you know, even fixes to iCloud.
Yep.
It's, you know, overall, it works. It works for contacts and calendars. It works for email for most people. Apart from junk mail filtering, which it seems to have switched off for the last few weeks.
Yeah, what's going on with the junk mail, honestly?
No idea. But if I get any more messages from girls saying they'd like to meet me, I'm going to go and kill myself.
I know.
Christ, it's like 20 a day. Either I'm very popular or I'm getting spammed.
I know, and it just seems all of a sudden, doesn't it? We had it was one of the things I loved, is I got no spam mail at all on my Apple account. And I'm very careful who I give it to as well. If it's just kind of, you know, you're signing up to this new web service or email subscription, I usually give out a different one. I don't use my Apple one for that. Mm. I tend to keep that for work and friends and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, like you say, you're getting all these sort of, you know, I attractive lady, we meet tomorrow, you know. Really? No, I don't think so.
Actually, speaking of iCloud and mail, one of the things I'd really like to see in either future version of OS 10 or iCloud is the fact that you can set rules on iCloud.com, which is great. You can set mm-hmm. rules in Apple Mail, which is great. Both of them are completely separate.
Yeah.
I would just, for when I'm having to block these types of messages, or if, you know, the common one I'm getting them at the moment is support center, unread messages. So I've set a rule up, but in order for me to block this at the server level so I don't get it on my iOS devices, I have to log into iCloud.com, go into mail, change the rules, and do them there. However, those rules don't appear in mail, and my mail rules don't appear in iCloud.
That's crazy.
If they could just sync in some way, the same with aliases as well. If you click edit alias in mail, it just opens up the iCloud website for you to edit there. I can't see any reason why you couldn't have these features of mail in these features of iCloud's mail in Apple Mail, especially when people are creating rules quite a lot for filtering into folders. I have all sorts of different folders, things for iTunes and Amazon orders and stuff, and I don't care what the email says. I'll read it at another time. So I have a rule just to filter it out of my inbox. Mm. But I've got half of them are set up in Apple Mail and half of them are set up on the server. So if I'm not at my Mac or it's not running, I don't get access to them. So I'd rather just see some sort of closer parity between iCloud and the Mac. At the moment, it's there, but it's still quite separate. It feels too disconnected.
Mm. Yeah, that's often the case. Is there anything you'd like to see, Jacob?
On the mail thing?
Just in the up next OS X release. Anything that's anything pressing?
Not really. I mean, I can't actually think of anything off the top of my head. I would like to see. I'd really like to see some better integration with stuff like Dropbox.
Mm.
Maybe some better support. I mean, there was once a rumor that Apple was going to buy Dropbox, which never happened and never will. Mm. But I'd like to see that and maybe better integration with social networks. And the App Store just, it's not something that they could really do in OS X, but it'd be more the App Store itself. The Mac App Store needs, I feel like there's just things they could help developers more with and they don't.
Yeah, just I'm like sure. I agree with you, and I think they need to find some way of drawing people into it better, because on mine it just kind of sits there, and I don't know why that is. I don't know about you guys, but I certainly end up looking at the iOS App Store a lot more than I do the Mac one.
It's because it takes too long to load. For me especially, like it takes at least a minute to load the main featured page.
Yeah.
And then to get updates, it takes forever. Yeah. And I'm used to it by now, so I just know what to do. But you shouldn't really have to do that.
And sometimes it's not that easy to find what you want as well, I think.
No, it's not.
You know, sort of find categories and things like that is not that easy.
One of the most annoying things is when you click a search result, like you sort it by what is it? There's like most popular, I think. I always use most popular because it's usually a really good app or top rated. And then you click an app and then you go back and the sorting is gone. It's a web page. It's gone. It's silly. Like there's just random stuff that bugs me about the App Store. It doesn't work properly at all.
Yeah.
And other than that, I'd like to see some user interface improvements.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, they can always do something cool with that. And I would like to see, I'd like to see them maybe update Logic Pro because I use it all the time and there are a lot of bugs. I mean, they'd randomly update little things and it'd be cool for them to do that. And the same with like GarageBand, the whole iLife suite, actually, just like iWork, hasn't been updated in a while. It just gets little bug fixes and tiny features like PhotoStream. But that's not... I mean, they used to do it every year. There was like this big overhaul. It was iLife 11. Ooh, you know.
Mm-hmm. I wish they could sort of sort that out a little bit as well, because the whole thing with iLife and your photographs and things is still all a bit kind of... clunky and messy. You know, like if you plug your iPhone in, it starts trying to sync.
I have it turned off. You can turn it off if you go into image capture, I think. Where is it? In utilities, there's an app called image capture. You
right.
open it up, and when your iPhone's plugged in, you open it up, you click your iPhone, and under the options thing at the bottom left, if it's not there, there's a little arrow, and you click it. And you click open no application
right
when you plug it in, so it never comes up, because that annoys me. I plug it in to charge it all the time and it's like, ugh,
yeah.
I have to close this.
Yeah, because
I don't know why image capture is even there.
Yeah, iPhoto just pops up, doesn't it? And you're like, no, it's all supposed to be in the cloud now. I don't need this. Here's a one for you. Do you think we'll see Dashboard go?
Yeah.
I was just thinking about this, and I thought I've got a feeling it's going to go.
I haven't used it in a few months. The only widget I have is for currency conversion, which I can get way faster by Googling or using Alfred.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it feels like it's been increasingly kind of sidelined. Because they did that option where by default it was kind of on its own screen off to one side, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And I really disliked that. So I set it back to the way that it used to be, where it pops up on top of what you were doing.
I think it's stupid to have it as a workspace kind of to the left.
My main use for dashboard half the time was to like bring up the calculator and things like that, so I could have numbers in the background, and I could be using the little calculator in the in the foreground and be doing my calculations and stuff, the little notepad thing and things like that. But
what do you use it for now?
Very little.
But it's cool. I mean, it has a purpose.
I do occasionally, like I say, use the calendar and the notepad, but that's about it, really.
And yeah, I have NVAlt for notes through Simple Note. I mean, I'm using just a bunch of other stuff already. So,
well, I think Apple really could very, very easily just kind of make those some sort of default thing that you can pull up, without having. What the hell's going on now? Without having that as a thing, a dashboard as such. Because I just, nobody's, I don't think, I doubt anybody's developing any widgets for it now.
I don't think anybody is. I know people keep them. Well, I think the package tracking one, whatever it's called, they keep it pretty up to date. There's some cool stats ones, like the what is it called? I think it's Stats Plus or something. I don't know. iStats. Yeah.
iStats Nano.
I used to use that all the time because I like to care. I mean, I used to care about resources. Now I just do Command Space and then type in TER, go to Terminal, and type in Top and find out what resources are being used. So
right.
It's easier. And on the note of Alfred, by the way, I think it'd be interesting if Apple actually bought Alfred and used it.
Oh my God, it'd be amazing.
It would be. Actually, I don't think it would be amazing because you know how Apple is. And the same with Google and what they did with Sparrow, for instance. They neglect it, but I could see them, if they put a lot of work into it, I could definitely see it being a great default feature.
The problem with that is Apple is very much a touchy-feely interface type company where they'd rather use your hands or whatever. Also, Google hired the one of the original developers of Quicksilver way back when, who ended up releasing the Google Quick Search Bar, which didn't last very long, but it set Quicksilver development back about 5 years. and it was just that's just an example of what they did with Sparrow. They Sparrowed it good and proper.
I can't believe they updated Sparrow a few weeks ago too. That was funny.
Yeah, they said they're going to keep doing bug fixes, but that's about it. But I
was just surprised they did. I thought, oh well, they're going to say that, but you know how they are.
Yeah, Sparrow is still the best Gmail app out there. But
the Airmail just came out and it's pretty good.
Ah, do you know what? I completely forgot about Airmail, and I shouldn't have because I just bought it as well.
I can't quite switch to it yet because there are certain things that just annoy me. But I mean, we can talk about that later. So,
yeah, it's not my mail app of choice. It doesn't seem to want to work with my email.
It's got too much stuff in it for me.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
What do you think about the dashboard? Do you think it'll go or not?
I'm surprised it's lasted this long. In all honesty. I mean, it was a great feature back in Leopard, and then it didn't last as long as we all expected it to. I used to use Dashboard quite a lot. Just like Jacob, I used to use iStats, and I use it now mainly
for... I even played games. There was one called, I think it was Paradise Paintball. I used to play games in Dashboard when I first got a Mac.
Oh, yeah, there still is a game section. crazily enough. But
yeah, there's a title there. I use it just for Garage Sale, which is a great app for eBay. And any auctions that I put on there, the Garage Sale includes a widget that shows you that your auction. So I just quickly control and arrow key towards dashboard just to see how they're doing. And I've got weather and currency converter. That's about it. I mean, I wouldn't miss it if it was gone. And no. I'd rather it not be there, because there's nothing worse than when you're trying to swipe over a space or you press the wrong key and then a dashboard pops up.
Yeah.
I'd rather not see it there than it be there at all.
I've got
something else that might leave soon is like Safari extensions.
Oh, I don't know. I use them constantly. If they remove them, I would switch to Chrome in a heartbeat.
Not remove them. No. I'm thinking like, you know how they have like that database thing online somewhere that
it's
like one page and they don't really develop it or anything.
Oh,
it just
yeah.
tells you, oh, here's the extensions, but it doesn't help anything. You might as well just Google it.
yeah.
Which is a shame, because there are some great extensions out there, and there was a Tumblr that was running that would post regularly, but as soon as Apple updated theirs more and more, they stopped doing it. They said, well, there's not much point competing with Apple if they're going to update theirs. And
but then...
yeah, then they stopped it.
I mean, you've got... I think all these sort of things are things that a lot of people who are new to... coming into the Mac newer will probably not be that familiar with and have very little use for, really. And I think that's what Apple's all about, isn't it, really? It's about it's about supporting, very much about supporting newer customers and making it easy for them to use the computer and things like that. And if you just got all this kind of stuff that's like a leftover from before... I think we've got a feeling we're going to see some stuff disappear in the next.
Yeah, but there's still advanced features. I mean, I've written about them on MacTuts Plus. Jordan's written about them. There's all kinds of little things that you just don't even notice. I wrote a whole, a little roundup on, I think it was like 30 ways to personalize your Mac. And there's like random little things you don't even think about. You just find them in option menus, like by holding option and clicking a menu. And there is stuff for advanced users that's just hidden. And if you're an advanced user, you find it.
So yeah.
I don't think they're going to take that away.
No. But yeah, there'll be something that goes. All right. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
Hope Contacts and Calendars removes the rich Corinthian leather.
I don't mind calendar. I think calendar's not too bad. Even the torn paper isn't that big of a deal. People whine about it. I'm like, oh, it's tiny. You can barely notice it, and people get so angry. It's hilarious.
One of the things I've never understood was why was calendars and contacts separate as a separate app. I could see a benefit in them being both together or all wrapped in mail. They tried to do this back with Leopard when they released the notes functionality, and then they pulled that out as a separate feature and as a separate app. But mail, contacts, and calendars together, it makes sense since iCloud unifies all three of them. I just don't see why it has to all be a separate app. You know, one app, one place to find all your contacts and calendar information.
Yeah, and communicating. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah, it turns it into like the Apple's own Outlook. And a lot of people use Outlook for that functionality. They like to have everything self-contained. And these three apps are, because you know they still communicate with each other. But at the moment, I've got three different screens open with contacts, calendars, and mail. And each of the screens look different. Address book doesn't match calendar, and they both don't match mail. So it's three different user interfaces that don't work together.
I think they could do something like on iOS, they use the phone app, and then they have contacts in there. And interestingly, I don't know why, this is just stupid, there's a contacts app on iOS as well, in case you didn't see it in your phone app. So there's a duplicate kind of. It's just dumb. There's no point. But they could do something like that, definitely.
Yeah. That app is dreadful on the iPad. The amount of wasted space.
Let's not.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It was a waste of making an app.
Cool. So, yeah, that sort of brings it. Do you think we'll see any completely new services coming at WWDC? Anything that's anyone's... I know we'll keep hearing about this. I don't know if this will be iOS only, but keep hearing about an iRadio being mentioned.
Mm. I don't know if boring. WWDC would be the place to announce it, but going off they, what you said...
They might do their own event, like, or just a... You know how they do the iPod event each year? Maybe just a music event.
Yeah, they shoehorned it all in together, didn't they? They kind of just amalgamated it into... Or they will amalgamate into one event. What about new hardware, the replacement for the Mac Pro?
Yeah, that's true.
Completely forgot.
That's true.
I wonder what it'll look like. Maybe it'll be flat.
it's been said online, hasn't it, that the stock of the Mac Pro is starting to go down and is unobtainable in a lot of places.
Yep, same with the MacBook Air and the Retina MacBook Pro.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I've got a feeling it'll be a... It'll look like the Mac Mini. It'll probably be the same form factor. And it'll be a bit more powerful. You know, it'll have like a dedicated graphics card, decent hard drive, whatever. But if you want to add additional drives or cards to it, it's unlikely, but I still think there's an outside chance Apple will release a Thunderbolt expansion box for it.
And you just sit on RAID?
Either like the Promise RAID, like that little RAID system, or just something you can add your own kit to. And it sits underneath the Mac Mini, so you've got this powerful Mac you can buy. And if you want the Mac Pro type of functionality, which a lot of people who buy a Mac Pro don't necessarily use it for that. They just want the raw power. You get the little box, and if you need that, you buy this other box to go with it.
Do you think they'll be able to put that much power in the little box? How big is the box going to be? The size of a PlayStation 3?
That's the thing. I don't know if it's... You know, when was the last time Intel updated the Xeon processors and...
Ooh.
What, you know, have Intel made enough...
Isn't it a server processor?
Yes.
Isn't it meant for servers?
Yeah, I think it might be just the high-end i7 then. I think maybe it'll just go completely. Some people use the Mac Pro because of the hard drives, the PCI expansion cards, the fact they can set up their own RAID or whatever. But I don't
know. Just because it looks awesome.
Yeah, it does, but it is a lot of aluminium for...
Isn't it like 50 pounds or something? It's like 60 pounds.
The damn thing is heavy. Yeah,
they are not
light machines.
It's not fun to move from house to house.
No. I used to have to carry them up to the Genius room, would be up a flight of stairs, which was not nice anytime anyone dropped in a Mac Pro or a Power Mac.
If Johnny was here, he would make a joke about me carrying one to a coffee shop. Because he likes to do that.
Absolutely.
I could see them doing that with the Mac Pro, though.
I think it'd be more consumer-based because Apple phased out the 17-inch MacBook Pro. You know, a lot of people were vocal about that. It was a small number of people who needed 17-inch.
It's a small minority, isn't it? Yeah,
and I think the Mac Pro is the same. I think there'll be people who are very vocal about it, but the number of people who would be vocal about it would be very small. Not enough.
They do have a quite substantial kind of artistic pro base, don't they, in terms of like people who do lots of video editing and things like that. I was watching I tweeted about this recently. I was watching a movie called Side by Side, which was a documentary made by Keanu Reeves, of all people, looking at the transition that we're in now between celluloid film and digital film, digital capturing for cinematography. And when you're watching it and kind of seeing all the pros doing their editing and what have you of sort of video footage, Max everywhere, absolutely everywhere. So, and I just, that really kind of made me think, yeah, there is quite a good proportion of people who are using them professionally, you know, to make some serious stuff with. So I don't think it would be in Apple's favor to, even though it is maybe a smallish market, I don't think they would kill it off.
Yeah. One of the things with the Mac Pro was that had going for it was you could shove in a massive bunch of hard drives. You know, you could put four drives of whatever size you'd need to. And that was the fastest way to be transferring and rendering lots of files. But with the speeds of USB 3, but the speeds of Thunderbolt that you can get, that kind of negates most of the need for the expansion of the Mac Pro. You can buy, there's a Promise RAID device, it's £1,000, and all it does is it has a bunch of drives, but it's really high speed, and you can plug that into any Mac with Thunderbolt. A lot of people are staying on a laptop now simply because they are that powerful. People are using the Retina MacBook Pro because it's got two Thunderbolt ports. You can video in and video out, you know, digital video in and out. So they're able to do that, put it via another external USB or Thunderbolt hard drive, and they're rendering all this video, and that works for them. So if the Retina MacBook Pro is powerful enough for people to do really high-end video editing or graphics or whatever, then is the Mac Pro just a relic? It would a Mac Mini equivalent of the Retina MacBook Pro, obviously without the screen, but would something in a smaller form factor with just the same, if not slightly better performance, be any different than having this huge tower house, which, while you can shove in a bunch of PCI cards, most people never did? Is there any benefit to just having this big chassis where, you know, most people aren't going to use these extra features?
I feel like you should just buy a big 27-inch iMac.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, there's no point in adding another line, really. It's just get rid of the Mac Pro, add a really nice Apple-made RAID server thing or something like that, and then just suggest that professionals, like if you have a consultant, then he would suggest, well, you know, like, oh, it's a 27-inch iMac. I think you should get this because it's got, you can get this processor in it. You can get, I think, 32 gigabytes of RAM. You can't get 64, but I don't think you need it. If you do, I'm sure you can buy it and put it in.
Well, the other thing is, I was just thinking from what you were saying there, the if Apple can sort of create a powerful base unit, if you like, that would handle a good bit of what you needed to do, and then you've got, like you say, like an external hub or whatever that you plug in through Thunderbolt, that kind of also then allows Apple to wash their hands of some of that as well, because one of the things that, well, one of the components that fails quite a lot is hard drives, isn't it? So if they sort of say, yeah, go ahead, knock yourself out, get a really fast, powerful, you know, RAID array, but you can get it from, you know, Seagate or whoever you want to get it from, and we don't have to have anything to do with that, thank you very much. And it's not internal either, they don't have to sort of look at it that way. So I just wondered whether that might be something that they might benefit from. And it gives it more upgradability, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, it'd make the cost of them, let's
say, making it a lot less,
yeah, if, you know, if people want the Mac Pro but didn't want to pay a Mac Pro price at the moment, you know, the Mac Pro is not a big seller by any stretch, and a lot of people don't buy it because it's too much computer to pay for the money for what they need it for. Say, for example, you knock off a few hundred pounds, a few hundred dollars off the price because you remove some of the functionality to an additional box, then people could buy this Mac Pro without the extra features they didn't need, still get the performance, and for the people who did need the extra features, they can buy that additional box and connect it up. And I just think Thunderbolt is it's in danger of becoming FireWire all over again, which it was a great feature, and it was extremely fast, it was better than USB in most aspects, but wasn't popular, and it cost a lot of companies a bit more to sell these products because it costs a bit more to make them. And Thunderbolt is becoming that way, especially with recent news that Intel was apparently being a little bit restrictive with the Thunderbolt interface. So a way of really pushing the fact that Apple are committed to Thunderbolt would be to have something that would really show what Thunderbolt can do beyond these little USB, these Thunderbolt docks that you can plug USB and video into, and some Thunderbolt hard drives and RAID systems. There's nothing out there that's any good apart from the Thunderbolt display, and even that hasn't been updated in so long. So Apple really need to have something that shows what Thunderbolt can do. I love Thunderbolt. I don't use it yet, but given half the chance, and if those Belkin docks were cheaper, I would have one in a heartbeat. Nothing would make me happier than having one cable besides the MagSafe coming out from my laptop. but at the moment, it's not the case. It's just too expensive.
Yeah, I would.
There's just nothing there, Thunderbolt-wise, that is any, you know, there's nothing I can see that and go, yeah, that looks really good. A £700 Thunderbolt display does not appeal to me because I don't need a £700 display.
Yeah. Can you imagine, I think somebody said this, I can't remember if it was on one of our podcasts, but if they'd stuck the Thunderbolt into an iPhone or an iPad, it would have a very different landscape, I think. You know, it'd be so widespread, wouldn't it? Everybody would be using it then.
That's what the rumor was, though. It wasn't that it was that they were going to do a smaller adapter, and everybody was like, "Ooh, it'll be Thunderbolt." Although technically, that's not smaller, so I don't know where that came from. But it would be awesome because your library would sync in like 20 seconds.
Yep, and you wouldn't have the palaver of different cables as well. It'd be one cable across all devices. You know, you'd be using it on your Mac, you'd use it on your iPhone.
Yeah, but when you have USB 3.0. You don't really need it. So Thunderbolt's like that other step. It's like there's USB 3.0 and then there's Thunderbolt and it's way up there right now, at least right now. I mean, and obviously then there's Ethernet, but Ethernet's not even as fast.
But it's as far as I understand, it's USB 3 is more than adequate for what most people would need for it, isn't it? So... Uh-huh. And it's substantially cheaper, and Apple have kind of also... hedge their bets by including USB 3 in a lot of the newer computers as well. So, you know, given half the chance, I'm sure you or I would look at what we need to do and think, do I get this really expensive Thunderbolt device or do I get this USB 3 device? I think I'll get the USB 3 device. Yeah. So it's such a shame. I really admire that Apple always try to go for the best thing, you know, and they create sort of bleeding edge technology, but sometimes they just don't implement that in a way that everyone wants to get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Thunderbolt was brand new when it came out. It was that joint venture with Intel when it was called Lightpeak. So Thunderbolt is still fairly new and there aren't many people using it. And that's gone against Apple because USB is, you know, it's so widespread that, you know, even now I tell anyone if they're looking to buy a new hard drive, buy a USB 3 drive, even if their Mac or PC isn't USB 3.
Yeah.
Because
in
the future, when they do get a USB 3 PC or Mac, it will work great. It'll be even faster than they've been using it. And they're the same price. Thunderbolt drives are very expensive in comparison, and there aren't many. And Thunderbolt is, it's more substantial than USB. It's not just designed as an end product where you plug in your drive, that's it. Thunderbolt allows you to do all sorts with displays, with Ethernet, with audio. It's that versatile. It's FireWire 800 on the steroids. It's effectively it's the equivalent of the PCI Express interface on the inside of most computers. So that's what it's designed for. That's why I think the Mac Pro would have some sort of Thunderbolt implementation, whether it's a box or something. And because of that, they've added this really good feature. I think you're right. I don't think they quite knew exactly what to do with it other than, well, we've got it, let's just put it on and see what happens. The Thunderbolt display is the most popular Thunderbolt device, and that isn't purchased by a lot of people.
Yeah. And they've already got it in, I think I read somewhere, there's only a handful of PCs that have got Thunderbolt as part of it.
Yeah, there's a website, thunderbolttechnology.net, which is updated by Intel whenever they license out accessories. I think there's like two Acer computers on there. that's about it.
They should have been pushing to have this in everything. They really should have, because it would have been for everyone's benefit, really.
Yeah. Let's just say that the Thunderbolt page doesn't scroll that far before you get to the bottom. There's a lot of hard drives. There's a couple of Acer laptops. I know there's a Drobo that supports Thunderbolt as well. Their 5D works with that. Apple Thunderbolt display, Apogee or, you know, devices, and then the rest of it is just different types of storage systems, and then Apple Mac. And then it's iMac, MacBook Air, MacBook Pro. Yeah, there's only two or three PCs on there.
Yeah. You could view it on your iPhone without scrolling. Right. Do we want to call that a day there, guys?
Yeah,
I think this is a good point to bring it to an end.
Yeah, I'd love to see exactly how wrong we are next week.
Oh, immensely. yeah, I mean, but that's one of the great things about Apple announcements is usually they kind of, well, over the last few years, less so. Last few years, there've been a bit of an anticlimax because there's been so much leaked out beforehand.
Yeah.
Do you not think it's been like, oh, yeah, great.
Here's, I haven't even read rumors since the last MacBook Apple.
You know.
I think, especially with their stock price tanking over the last few months, I think even Tim Cook said at D11 that, was it D11 or before then when he said the iMac release was probably a bit too soon. We probably should have waited. I think they need to make sure this event, whatever happens, I mean, we know it's a developer conference, so it needs to be aimed towards those. And, you know, they're not going to release a new iPhone or iPad or whatever, but they need to have something that knocks everyone's socks off, even if it's previewing iOS 7. If it's not available until September, like it has been the last few years, that's fine, but it has to have some fundamental changes to make everyone listen, because a lot of people think Apple are playing the catch-up game. And they are.
It feels like it right now. It feels like, you know, other people like Samsung and Google are pushing ahead of them. And it may be that they're just going to leap over the top of all of them, for all we know, and just blow them out of the water and go, ha-ha, you know. look what we've been working on, and let's hope that's the case. But so it's going to be, and like you say, I think there's a lot of expectation riding on it that they're going to come up with something good. If there's just a bit of tweaking here and there, that people are going to come away from that not very satisfied at all, I think.
Yeah. Again, not to bang on about iOS too much, or else, you know, incur the wrath of Johnny, but when I upgraded my iPhone 4 to 5, it just showed me how long in the tooth iOS was. It just feels like very old software running on a very new phone. And, you know, it's effectively that's what it is, and it has had updates over the years, but it looks the same as the original iPhone OS. You know, there's not that much of a change, and... Yes, it is such an easy-to-use interface, and we're so used to it, so fundamental changes would probably hurt it, but there needs to be something just to make it feel a bit modern, you know, make it feel as though it can compete with Android, because stock Android on the Nexus 4 and similar devices does look great. Even Windows Phone, which isn't something I'm particularly looking forward to ever using, but... I think it still looks quite good, and iOS is looking dated in comparison.
Absolutely. You know, and if they had turned round and at the same time as they released the iPhone 5, they released a new operating system to go with it, I think they would have sold an awful lot more of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people like myself looked at that and just sort of went, I've got the 4S, I don't see a need to get a 5, really. There was no compelling thing making me do that.
4S to 5, I think for anyone at the moment, there's no need to upgrade, you know, if that screen is just being wasted on iOS 6. I can't see anyone needing to go from 4S to 5 and thinking, I'm really glad I made this decision. I went from a 4 to 5 and I was happy, but...
Oh, that'd be fine, yeah.
If I was on a 4S, I'd still be on a 4S.
Yeah, it was just no point doing it other than having to have the latest thing. That would be the only excuse to have one.
iPad 2, I never wanted to upgrade to the Retina display. I think the display is great, but it wasn't for me. I upgraded to an iPad mini because of the form factor, but to me, I wouldn't upgrade unless there was a really compelling reason to.
Yeah, I waited... initially, when then the 2 came out, and I was like, meh, it's not that exciting. But when they brought the Retina display out, that was it. I was in. That's what made me jump onto the iPad 3. So, and I've got to say, if they brought out a substantially slimmer and lighter iPad, I'd be very tempted by that. Because, you know, if you had that kind of like Retina, not what the word, sorry, kind of iPad mini lightness, but as an iPad size, that'd be nice. That'd be very
that
nice.
That would
be very difficult technically how they could do that, but
that was the main reason I changed my iPad was because it was just, it was quite heavy. You know, the mini is perfect. I do miss the larger screen, but I don't miss the weight.
No, absolutely. That's one thing. When I picked up the mini, I was like, oh, this is lovely. It's so light. I can barely feel it in my hand. Yeah, fabulous. Fabulous. Right, we'll call it a day then. Where can we find you, Jordan, if we need to get you?
You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Merrick, J-O-R-D-A-N, M-E-R-R-I-C-K. God, I forgot to spell my own name then. and you can find me at my blog, sparsebundle.net.
Cool. Jacob, where can we get you?
I'm Penderworth on Twitter and thepapermail.com.
Excellent. And you can get me at Rich Harkness on Twitter. And all my blog is areyougettingit.co.uk, which I will write something on sometime. I have an idea in my head. I just haven't got around to writing it down. So there we go. That was episode 25. You could also keep up to date with what's going on with the podcast by following any of us. And also we have our own podcast Twitter account, which is at BTTM Podcast, isn't it? So follow along on there. And write us a review on iTunes as well, please. That'd be great if you can. And if we get some reviews, we'll try and read them out on the show. Thanks very much for listening.
That was Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting, or find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find him on the internet, www.tdmss.com. Thanks for listening.
Apple Macintosh.